make believe, let's not pretend. We might be ill, but we're on the mend. It never starts, it never ends. Welcome to Craig and Friends. Welcome to Craig and Friends. Welcome to Craig and Friends.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, the dulcet, beautiful tones of Macy Rodman, who just arrived as I hurriedly threw on clothing, because in a rare example of me not being ready ahead of time, I was I think I did remarkably well.
Yeah, your clothes and I specified this outfit on my rider, so thank you for respecting that.
Well, and I appreciate that you enjoy Brian Ferry as much as you do, because let me refill your water.
Oh my god, I chugged that. I'm sorry, I'm hungover.
No. This is, I think we're in a similar place. I was like, we're in a similar place. I'm not hungover.
Solidarity.
Thank you. I was grasping for words because I overslept partially because of a Xanax taken after a week of free-floating anxiety that I mentioned to you in the hallway.
Yeah.
But it's all over. Like, it got taken care of.
Yeah, that's great.
Then all the structure inside of the faded. And
isn't that a nice moment?
But
it's almost like too relaxing, you know. It's like you kind of immediately fall into a coma. Like,
exactly. Like, I was like, well, that's good, but I was like, geez, I really overslept today, like, you know. Yeah. but then at the same time I was like, oh, I'm so relieved that's gone. I'm so relieved. Let me grab that water and then we'll continue.
Oh, work.
Oh, look, that's good. I still have another podcast playing on my...
Who are you listening to?
How did this get made?
Oh, the movie one.
Yeah.
That's good.
I woke up to it, and you always know that you've overslept when you're like, what movie are they talking about? And it's like something you're like, wow, I'm far down the list.
Like, yeah, it's like you've gone through all the episodes of the podcast you were listening to, and you're on like... Chelsea Handler's podcast. A totally different, paid like
show you might enjoy
one.
Yeah, exactly. So you said you're hungover. You had a big show last night at the Naval.
Yeah, it was really, really fun. I like, so many people moved to LA from Brooklyn, so
just
like, it's always like kind of reunion vibes when I come here. So it was just like really great, and it was the first day on my tour that I haven't had to wake up at like fucking 5 a.m. or something.
That for touring is not ideal.
Yeah, and I have a day off today. I'm flying today, but I don't have a show. Right. So I was like, woo, let's go. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm so happy we can make this happen, because I was hoping to come to New York last year.
Yeah.
But I was overly ambitious. I was like, right, we're starting to be able to go places. I'll go to New York and London. Did not go to either place. But I'm going to London next week.
Oh, fab.
Yeah.
What are you doing there?
I'm going to visit my lady friend, Ada, and my partner, I guess, is the better way to put it. Although I like saying lady friend from London.
It has a nice ring to it.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a mid-60s kink song or something.
Lady friend from London.
Like maybe Dave sang it.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to tape some shows over there too, which is going to be fun.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's cool.
I love it there. Have you been to...
I've never been. I was just talking to someone last night who was like, you have to go to London. You have to go to London. I'm like, I want to go. I'm told.
Yeah, I love that too. Like, oh, you must do it. And you're like, yeah, it hasn't worked out yet. Okay. Like,
yeah,
it's not like, can you, okay, yes, I do want to.
Get off my back.
But you, on the tour, where have you hit for tour stops?
So started in Austin for South by Southwest.
Oh, cool. How was South by Southwest?
It was cool. It was my first one.
Congratulations. That's like a big thing, right?
Yeah, it was sick. Yeah. And the shows, the show, one went really well and one was kind of weird.
How did it go weird? What was the weird part?
So it was the last day, and apparently everyone leaves on Sunday, like in the morning, and it was in Sunday, like afternoon. So it was like a daytime show. So it was, no one was there really. I mean, there were a few people there, but it was a lot of people that were like playing the show.
Yes.
And we were all exhausted. And so like by the time I got up there, I was like the headliner, quote unquote, or whatever, and I was always on the last. So by the time I got up there, everyone was just like,
oh yeah,
like yeah, snooze fest. And I was like trying to be like, okay, like let's clap, like let's get into this. And everyone, like, I was like, you guys, like come on. I was like getting kind of aggressive, but
yeah, give me something, yeah,
one thing, even if it's bad, like yeah, boo me. They were just not given nothing, but I can't blame them. It was a tiring weekend, but apparently it was like 30% capacity of what it normally is.
Oh, so then you got 30% capacity and all the people fleeing early to quote avoid the traffic.
Yeah,
and you got a crowd fucking, that's yeah,
it was packed as hell. I can't yeah, imagine that.
Yeah, like okay, so that's 30% capacity. So otherwise, it's just like a zoo.
Apparently, it's just body to body. Yeah. And you can't get into anything. I'm like, that sounds miserable.
That's what I've heard, just in stories of people being like, oh yeah, because I remember there was this band in Boston that drove in an old school bus
yeah,
or something. That was like the gag. And then it's like, you get there and it's just like ants.
So maybe in a way this was like the ideal year yeah, to go.
I think so. Yeah, I bet it was. Yeah. And now you can be like, oh yeah, we were there at the 30% year.
Yeah.
And then
Dolly Parton played, and apparently the room didn't fill up completely.
Okay, that's bananas.
I know.
Yeah.
In Texas?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes no sense.
It was a little confusing. You had to like buy an NFT and like, it was weird. It was
wait, you had to buy an NFT to go to a Dolly Parton show?
I was playing at the same time, so I couldn't go.
Oh, right, but, right. Well, yeah, that's good because you didn't have to buy an NFT.
I know. You had to like buy an NFT of like a butterfly or something.
Oh, it good was Lord.
Like, yeah, it was a weird like marketing scheme. And then she has a book or something. It was like a weird kind of like multi-level event.
Yeah, multi-tier marketing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
She is nonstop with that, which is like, and one way you go, like, I admire the hustle. Yeah. And the other side of me goes like, Dolly, you've done okay. Like,
yeah, can you fucking take a nap? Like,
slow down, chill out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even on interviews, you know, she had that new series of TV movies for Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Man, can she crowbar a plug-in? I've never seen anyone as adept at crowbarring a plug-in, because you're also like, oh, I love Dolly. Oh, she's wonderful. And she will, like, have the mission on mind the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think there is something kind of like nefarious about someone that everyone loves. I'm like, what is wrong with Dolly Parton? And you can't say that. Like, I'll be assassinated.
Yeah, exactly. We're both going to get in real big trouble. But
yeah,
just because we're
you're probably
it's it for me. That's
incriminated
it
too. Yeah, now that I said that.
Ever heard that podcast, Cocaine and Rhinestones?
No.
Oh my God, it's so great. I got obsessed with it at the beginning of the year. It's this guy, Taylor Mahan Coe, who's the son of David Allan Coe.
Oh.
And it's an exhaustively researched history of modern country music, like from the, I guess, 20th century country music. The entire season two is this epic thing that has episodes that are about like Billy Sherrill's whole history and all this. And then George Jones and Tammy Wynette are the overriding story for all of season two.
Oh.
So if you want to hear some horrific cocaine stories, go for like the George Jones episodes. But he was...
Oh, I never would have known.
Oh, it's so wild. Some of the country debauchery is blows rock and roll hedonism out of the water.
Like, yes. Yeah, I guess because you're like in the country to some extent. I mean, Nashville, I guess, is a big city, but
still a lot of them
you get away with a lot more, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like slower tempos, but it's like Fleetwood Mac was like the largest consumer of cocaine, right?
Yeah.
For like a couple of years. And everything's like doom, doom, doom.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's yeah, very mellow. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I feel like with stimulants can like give you this thing where it's like the stuff that you're making doesn't necessarily mimic
yeah,
stimulation.
Yeah.
But you're just like focusing on like a groove or like a like yeah, section for a really long time and like making it complicated.
Yes.
I feel like that is like, that's coke brain.
You're so right. And also there's a story about from Rumors where they wore out the tape so much, but they had to back up the master of the drums.
Uh-huh.
And it's a good thing they did, because otherwise they had wiped off the high end completely and they didn't notice because it was just endless. We got to fix that banjo part, you know, like that kind of
oh
stuff.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there was like no high end left. And then the engineer had to sync them up by hand. He had a joystick. So there was no like lock in mechanism.
Oh my God.
And of course, that was cocaine fueled as well.
Yeah, that sounds.
It has to. Like, it's okay. It's good. The left one's good. The right one's good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have a second. Okay, yeah.
I almost have it. I almost have it. Yeah. What kind of drugs do you like? Do you like drugs?
I'm unfortunately prone to uppers. Like, high school was my, like, meth years, like, smoking meth and stuff, because I worked three jobs. And
that'll do it.
Yeah, so I was trying desperately to get out of Juneau, Alaska. So I worked at, like, a bagel shop at night, cleaning up. I worked as a clerk at a law office during the day. And then a restaurant, like a salmon tourist restaurant.
Oh, wow. Okay. So fairly high pressure stuff, like the law office stuff, because there's always a vibe going on at a law office, right?
Well, it was kind of a, like, it was a, like, Twin Peaks, if Twin Peaks had a law office.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
It was like the guy, like the receptionist was kind of like, you know, Bob, like, and Bob's like, kind of like talking to his, like, 16-year-old girlfriend on FaceTime or whatever, and like the other guys, like, just always eating a sub, like, is like, it was kind of high pressure, but not really.
Okay, so like a little used car dealership.
Yes.
And then, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then what was the bagel shop like?
So I worked the night shift, that was like when it was closed. I would like do the cleaning and wash all the dishes and stuff like that.
Sure. That's good though, in a way, because it's like no one's there.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah.
Blast music. And,
sure.
Yeah.
What would you be blasting at the time?
Probably Destiny's Child.
Yeah. You need motivation, and that is going to motivate you.
Yeah. And this was when, so the person that got me into meth was this gay guy who worked at the porn store, like a few doors down.
Uh-huh.
And that place would be open as late as they wanted it to be also, you
know? Okay, yeah, sure.
Like, nothing is open late in Juneau, Alaska, except for this fucking porn store. So, like, they should have known something was wrong. But
did it have the booths and everything?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I think so. Yeah, they must have.
Yeah, if it's open all night, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the
point?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And they there was a weird, like, smoking element to it, too. I feel like they had, like, those they had, like, flavored cigarettes and stuff. So maybe they had, like, hookah. I can't quite remember. It was also, like, a male. They did, like, Western Union, too. It was, like...
What?
It was weird. There was, like, a weird, like, money order element to it.
Oh, my God.
Like, honestly, I wish it was still there. It was fab.
What was the name of the porn store?
It was called something, like, Mail order, mail.
Oh, wow. Like, so it worked on two levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, fuck. Mail call.
Mail call.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's the best name for a porn store / booth, emporium, and money, Western Union Center I've ever heard.
Yeah. And, yeah, I think it had another, like, subtitle or something, but mail call is what everyone called it.
How big was the place? Was it, like, a substantially large?
It was pretty tiny.
That's even more interesting.
Yeah. It had a tiny entranceway, and then it had a back room with all the DVDs and stuff. And then, yeah, it probably had, like, some of the booths. But the front was where there was, like, cigarettes and, you know, weed grinders and, like,
sure.
All the, like, et cetera, you know?
Yeah, the accoutrement of the lifestyle.
Crack pipes and stuff.
I love when you see that at smoke shops. Like, I was not skilled in I was not skilled in the art of that, and I was looking for, I don't know what the hell it was. I think I was trying to buy a weed thing, which does not agree with me, but I was like, oh, I should get one.
Now. Yeah.
And I'm looking at the pipes, and I'm like, and the person with me was like, you know, they're selling crack pipes here. And I was like, oh yeah, that is. Like, you know.
Yeah. That blew my little pea brain when I saw when I realized that that's what that was.
Yeah. Because at first you just think, oh, they got a lot of bongs here.
Yeah. Totally.
So what was the meth that you used, like, mainly to keep you moving through the jobs?
Yeah. I think that's like, well, yeah, it was just like that. It was that guy who was like kind of older. It was kind of a weird relationship. And then my friend, who is this like rich kid who lived in the Valley.
What's the Valley in Alaska?
Mendenhall Valley.
Oh, Mendenhall
Valley. It's like
David Mendenhall, of course. The
is that true?
No.
I don't know.
He's a little kid and over the top, so I just like to imagine that he like he left show business and then went and created the
Mendenhall. He founded Juneau, Alaska. the Valley. So there's downtown. Juneau is like three or four sections. It's like downtown, which is like the gorgeous old gold rushy looking
okay.
downtown. There's the Valley, which is like there's like trailer parks and like projects and stuff, but then also Richie's live out there in like the more secluded part of it.
Yeah.
And then there's Out the Road.
Out the Road, wow.
Which it's like where it's just like sparsely
populated
little houses and stuff. Yeah. And those are usually really expensive.
Oh, okay.
And then in between the valley and Out the Road is Lemon Creek, and that's where I lived, which is like trailer parks, the prison, industrial area.
Yeah.
Really ugly and hideous. but really fun also. But yeah, my friend lived in the valley and his parents were super rich and we would just like go and steal pills from people's houses.
Sure.
And like they had a downstairs tenant and so we would just like raid her pills and stuff. So it was a combo of like having a lot of opportunities to try different pills and seeing what I liked, and then having the access to the meth by this weird guy who had kind of an inappropriate crush on me.
those could be used for the right reasons, though.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah. I certainly used it. Yeah, great. Oh, but okay. So I went on a long tangent. You were asking the music.
No. That's. I mean, I've been throwing out little darts and stuff like that because that's what I love.
Yeah. This guy was the guy that got me into like music other than what my parents listened to. So he was exposing me to like Little Kim,
yeah,
and the Prodigy and like British like club shit and rap and like Amanda Lepore's music, yeah, and just like, you know, stuff like that.
That's, yeah. So what were your parents listening to before?
It was like radio stuff, so like Shania Twain,
yeah,
Matchbox 20 and stuff.
Okay, sure.
Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. My mom like loved Shaggy. I don't know. It was super random. It was super, super random.
Sure. Yeah. And what was your one of your favorite things when you like first favorite musics before discovering the Prodigy, Amanda Lepore, etc.?
I loved Shania Twain. I loved Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Those were probably... And Madonna.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Now, you mentioned the, my music lunchbox.
Yeah.
It was the first thing that we talked about, really, other than the Xanax and all that fun stuff. But, and they're often in the same sentence, Madonna.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Do you have a favorite Madonna era?
Music.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Impressive Instant and why am I blanking?
No, it's a what's the song that's like da 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 music and a star.
That's Impressive Instant.
Oh,
yeah.
It is Impressive Instant. Yeah. Right.
Oh, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, right. Yeah, amazing. And then yeah, the acoustic ones like the really mournful ones on there.
Yeah.
I love that too.
Paradise Not For Me. Or, yeah.
Then I was going to say, is there a song on there called Nobody Loves Me? Or no, that's Brian Ferry. That's not, doesn't apply.
Hmm. There is something like that.
Yeah,
though.
It's just like strummy guitar. And she's like, na, da, na, da, na. So this is really helpful that, for anyone listening.
At least we won't get copyright struck.
No, exactly. Exactly. Right. We're going to get drummed out of town for Dolly Parton talk. And then the Madonna fans are going to come for us.
Oh my God. I know. Listen, we like her.
Yeah, we love
her. Support,
we I have the lunchbox. Okay. Come on.
I have a Ray of Light lunchbox, actually.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. I love that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's, I love that record too. I almost think of those, you know, they're like kind of companion records.
Yeah. They're kind of two. So it's like, it goes Ray of Light, Music, American Life. It's like Ray of Light is like good, lawful good or whatever. Music is like chaotic good. And American Life is like chaotic evil. Because I think they all share, like Mirror Wise did a lot of the production.
Yeah, and William Orbit is in there somewhere. Yeah.
He did like Beautiful Stranger and a lot of the a lot of Ray of Light.
That's right. Yeah, and I love Beautiful Stranger. That's
so good. So good.
It's the best thing about Austin Powers.
Yeah, baby. It's really good. Her soundtrack work is really good. Her cover of American Pie is sick.
Yeah, that is really good.
Yeah. But I really connected to Madonna when she got into the like freak folk thing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start making music? Was this around this time or this is later? And I know I'm now jumping to, I think, Brooklyn when you started.
Yeah. Well, my sibling is 4 years younger than me, and they are like a music prodigy. Like, they play every instrument. They like have been drumming since they were 6 years old, and so that was like, I would always just like kind of like go in the garage while they were playing and like try to like sing along while they were like doing their thing. And that was like how we bonded. But then I started like writing music after I dropped out of school, probably when I was like 20. Mm-hmm.
And this was Parsons?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 20 or 21 or something.
Yeah. How long were you at Parsons for?
Like 2 years.
And what did you go into as your focus of study?
Parsons. Oh, no. The Parsons major? Parsons.
At Parsons, I majored at Parsons.
Malkovich.
My favorite class was Parsons. And my favorite teacher was also Parsons.
Mr. Parsons. He was great. Fashion design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any specific
I wanted to do menswear for some reason. Uh-huh. I like that was like some latent trans like overcompensating, I think. You know, it's like yeah, you can't like design that thing that you've been drawing since you were a little kid. Like make suits.
It's so funny though, right? So often people will do the thing that's like it like no one's telling you, right?
Yeah,
it's inside. There's a voice of like, don't do that. That's
it's too easy. It feels too good. Yeah,
yeah. You like that? You can't. Don't do that.
Yeah, totally. I did make like freaky deaky menswear, so I see how that was kind of like a gender exploration or something.
Uh-huh.
But I'm like, you just wanted to make little like slutty video game outfits, like, would you should have just done that, you know?
When did you start drawing garments or clothing or anything,
really? I've drawn for as long as I can remember, and it was always like, even when I was a little kid, it was always like inappropriately like slutty, like glamorous on like strippers, you know.
Yeah, appropriately, you mean?
No, yeah. No,
because it's yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just like the rest of the kids.
Yeah. Were any, I'm trying to think of the like people, the celebrities, I guess Madonna would be one that would sort of had been pulling your eye, right?
Oh yeah.
And Tina Turner, because there's words are not my friend today. There's like a through line in terms of look and presentation with the two of them.
Oh yeah.
And was there anyone else like that?
Britney was huge for me. Because her like, I guess Slave for You era, where it was like everything was really like the torso was really exaggerated and long, the pant was kind of at pussy drop,
pussy length. They teach you that at Parsons.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly, that's a technical term. Mr. Parsons told me.
I'm a kind of a fan of fashion, so I know a few of the technical terms, so don't mind me if I drop them in.
Pussy drop. Whip stitch. Yeah, she had the low rise pants, and then like everything was like festooned with a scarf, and like
stuff
hanging off everywhere, and the like straight kind of like shaggy hair.
Sure.
I was obsessed with her.
Just thinking, Steven Tyler almost fits into that.
They played the Super Bowl together one year, and they looked kind of similar. Yeah,
like he was probably like raiding her wardrobe.
Oh, completely.
Like, I'll just borrow this scarf.
She won't notice. And then Christina Dirty era was huge, and like probably like I don't know.
Well, it's okay, we can come back to it, because I mean that's a pretty
I was into like fashion designers and stuff, so like I would look at runways and stuff too.
So when did that start, like checking out, like being aware of designers, because we all see clothes, but then you know at a certain point you tip over into connoisseur land. Yeah,
I was obsessed with magazines because it was like a kind of way to like feel like I could inform myself in the world outside of Juno, you know?
Sure, yeah.
So comic books and magazines and like Rolling Stone and then fashion magazines and stuff, and reading like the notes and the editorials, who designed stuff.
Yeah.
I just got obsessed with that, and like then like just fully like dove in.
Rolling Stone was a huge thing for me as well. Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember the first episode I got. There you go. Well, you know what? It's words.
Welcome back to Rolling Stone.
On this episode, I think Cybill Shepherd was on the cover of the first one I got. I'm quite old.
That's a good one.
Very good. Yeah, and especially pre-internet, that was the best thing for finding out. And because then those top 100 lists of albums, like, they actually were helpful and useful, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, we didn't really have internet until I was probably 15 or something.
So before that, really, it is magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found out about so much through, like, Blender and Spin and stuff. Like,
Spin used to be incredible.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blender, I think I would get every once in a while, but I didn't know it as well.
Yeah. It was similar. It was a little more, like, snarky or something. I think it was also, like, not just music. It was, like, culture generally.
Okay, sure. Yeah. And there was that stuff, too, though. There'd be, like, magazines that were kind of some music, fashion, and a whole bunch of stuff. Like,
yeah.
Really chic things, if you, like, look at them now, if there was something equivalent now. I mean, maybe there are, but they're mostly websites, and everything's very niche.
All mashed together.
Yeah. So, in Juno, what was Juno like? I mean, I think we have a sense of it, but what was the vibe like at school and everything?
It's kind of weird, because you have the, like, you have, like, kind of working, like, blue collar, like, working class, like, what, like, Republican sentiment, and then you also have this kind of, like, hippie Pacific Northwest sentiment. So, like, as far as, like, gay shit goes there, it's, like, weirdly, like, kind of fine, but like, people will just kind of, like, leave you over there, you know?
So not really discussed, but not harassed as much?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was okay. I mean, I hung out with, like, the druggies mostly, so that kind of, like, you're able to disguise it a bit if you just look kind of weird and sick, you know?
yeah.
But, yeah, no, I was a pretty good student. I dipped into, like, heavy drug use for a couple of years, and then was like, all right, I gotta get the fuck out of here. And then, like,
if you're gonna do it, that's a good age.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. Then I continued, but later. But
sorry, I'll amend that. A good age to start.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So familiar. To, to get your feet wet. Yeah. Totally.
Know what you like. Know what works for you.
But I mean, I found it really, really boring. Mostly, that was, like, my takeaway.
Yeah, and cold.
You didn't really have summers there when I grew up there. Now they have, like, really beautiful, amazing warm summers, which is kind of scary.
That's lovely global warming.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, a nice side effect. That's what Juno is.
It's not all bad, everybody.
Vacation Come on. Spot. Totally.
So I know two people from Fairbanks, actually. The most recent guest, Denali, is from Fairbanks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then a friend of mine, Rick. So I know, I've heard more about Fairbanks than Juno, even though Juno
Fairbanks
is, like,
like, you can dump a water bottle out and it'll be ice before it hits the ground.
Oh my God. My parents are from Canada, so I visited enough that I'm like, oh yeah, that's extreme. That's very extreme.
It's crazy. Unique.
Yeah. Because I always complain about Massachusetts being too cold, but you had it proper, really cold, which also makes the slutty outfit difficult.
Yeah. Totally. Totally.
Yeah. How many, would you wear a lot of flannel? What was the protective layer that you would go for?
So people there weirdly just kind of, like, the, like, general sentiment is to, like, just, like, tough it. Like, you never saw an umbrella there, even though it rained constantly.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of, like, a hoodie with either a leather jacket or, like, a kind of North Face-y jacket.
Yeah.
And then, like, skinny jeans, and I'm trying to think of what shoe I would wear. Like, a basketball shoe?
Yeah,
like,
something
weird.
Yeah, like, in between, not quite a boot kind of thing. Yeah, you're not going to go, like, no, I'm not going to admit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, very that. Not gonna let the terrorists win.
freedom shoes is what we like to call
exactly.
them.
Exactly. but, yeah, I think I was, like, in high school, I did, like, the emo phase, and then moved on to, like, Little Edie vibes, where it was just, like, lots of, like, disparate kind of thrifty, like, scarves and stuff.
Flowing things. Again.
Yeah. And then, like, a blazer and another blazer. Yeah.
So what was the first romantic entanglement? Was that in Juno?
Well, it was that weird guy, the weird porn guy,
kind
of tried to make out with me a couple of times. And
was it like, oh, well, okay, maybe, because you did just give me the stuff.
I think even then I was like, this is weird. And like, I remember at one point I was like, hey, we probably should like not hang out anymore, because if my dad like sees you texting me, he's gonna like freak out. He's not gonna like it.
Yeah.
And then he like hacked into my Facebook or my MySpace and stuff, and like,
what?
Yeah, did a bunch of weird shit.
Oh no, so you got like identity jacked in a
yeah
way.
Weirdly, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But
it's good to get that out of the way early too.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Romantic shit did not start until I moved to New York.
Okay, so you moved to New York for Parsons, right?
Yes.
Okay, and then that's 18, 19 yes. around then? Okay, cool. So had you visited Brooklyn before going?
We did, me and my mom did one like visit
yeah.
to check out the school. And then, my mom died right before I got accepted, and then I like sent out to this like modeling thing, this like cross-country modeling photo shoot thing mm-hmm. with that photographer Ryan McGinley
mm-hmm.
So that was like how I ended up getting to New York, was this like weird modeling gig, but yeah, I had only been once before.
So was that the first modeling gig that yeah. you did? What was that like?
It was so weird because I just sent photos in over the internet and was coming just straight from Juno. And
yeah.
I like kind of didn't think it was real until I got there. And then it was like, okay, everybody get naked. It's like,
oh, know. Okay. Was that kind of weird modeling?
Yeah, thing? It was art, but also naked and also like kind of like weird, you know, New York, Terry Richardson, blurry, you know, yeah. not quite Terry Richardson, but you know, a little like sexy, like, woo.
Yeah. Didn't have his cool glasses, I guess.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
I think those glasses helped him get away with a lot, even though they made him look
yeah,
the creepiest.
Like, come on. Yeah. Look at him.
No, look at him. Come on. Well, you know what's come on.
Yeah. Totally.
Like if he was ever pulled in for a lineup for anything in a
yeah.
cop station.
This guy?
That,
no.
like, yeah, thing. Yeah. He couldn't harm anyone. Yeah. Yeah.
Let like, me try mine. Yeah.
I've been looking for frames like this.
Yeah.
So it was that kind of weird thing, but also weird. I'm guessing that thing where you're like, this seems a little weird, but I'm in New York, so this is good.
Well, the road trip took place. We started in San Francisco. We went up like Montana and then down to Tennessee. It was like all across the country that we did this like nude road trip.
And so wait, you shot nude in various places?
Yeah, in like wow. cave systems mostly,
oh,
but
wow.
like also deserts and like houses in the middle of Montana and stuff.
What's Montana like? It seems strange to me. I think I drove through it once on a tour, and
yeah.
It's just a lot of nothing. It looks
yeah,
like.
we kind of just like stayed in a spot that was like weirdly nothing.
Yeah,
and that was like that was the shot or whatever, you know. Or no, I think there we were jumping off of a barn onto a stunt mat. And
uh-huh.
so the shot was like a falling person, you know?
That's fun, nude.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool. It's cool. I like all the photos still.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was a trip because I never really hung out with anyone who was like cool with a gay person, like outwardly like New York people, you
yeah.
know? And then the photographer was gay. It was like people were talking about art that I knew about. It was like I could like keep up with people, and yeah, so it was a really eye-opening experience. And like, I don't know, I was always like really like kind of anorexic and like ashamed of my body, so it was like very freeing to be like, okay, like it's actually fine to just like be naked in front of people and not be ashamed of yourself.
That is a big step.
It was huge.
Yeah,
yeah,
I had
totally.
Eating disorder stuff myself, and the body dysmorphia can pop up at the most fun times too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you still find that as well?
Oh, sure. But like, it's pretty under control at this point. Now I'm
same,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, oh, well, you look a little like, not like you would like to look, but like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
You know, your body is, does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So like, thank God.
When did that start, the anorexia stuff?
That's so Barbara Walters. I love that.
I'll get to what tree would you be? if you were a tree.
I mean, in high school, for sure. I think for a lot of trans girls, it is a way to androgenize your body, you know, mm-hmm. Either gaining weight or losing weight to an extreme. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely, and it's a way to feel in control.
Right.
So that was, I think, like, really what I was doing with that. And then when I moved to New York, it was like, it was never as intense as it was when I was, like, in Juneau, because it was, I don't know. I was not functioning for the same reason.
Sure. So you found it, like, it lessened a bit in New York?
Totally.
Probably also because you're in the milieu of people that are similarly minded.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And when did you start considering your gender identity? Would that be in high school, or would it be more when you're in New York and around, I guess, more open-minded people or people willing to discuss the things that you mentioned in the photo shoot?
I didn't really know what trans was for a really long time. I mean, I knew, like, Amanda Lepore, and then maybe that's it. Like before moving to New York.
Sure, of course.
And then moving to New York, you, like, kind of get a bigger sense of, like, what trans people, how they exist in life, and, you know,
and actually seeing people, right?
Yeah,
just actually seeing them, it, like, makes a tremendous difference. You can walk to the store and you see a gay person, you see a trans person, you see all kinds of people. Whereas if you feel like you're the only person of whatever stripe wherever you are,
it
doesn't seem possible.
There was one trans lady in town in Juneau, and, like, I think she was pretty well liked. She worked at Kmart and another grocery store, and she was really fab. Like, she was just, like, glam.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was always like, I, like, can't really imagine. Like, she's definitely, like, not involved in, like, communities like my parents are, like, so it was hard to, like, connect what that, it's like, oh, that's someone who exists over there, you know?
Yes, in their own sphere.
Yeah,
populated by them.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah, she must just go home and sit alone all night.
Yeah, we see her occasionally at the store. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was weird that she lived in Juneau, honestly. But yeah, I think, when did I really, like, start? Because when I moved here, when I started doing the, like, menswear fashion stuff, I started kind of, like, pushing my own dressing boundaries. And I would, like, wear weird hair extensions and bleach my eyebrows and wear, like, leggings and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I started doing drag eventually.
What was your drag name?
Macy Rodman.
Okay.
Because if you look up her skirt, you may see Rodman. So stupid. and, like, such a clunky pun.
it's a good one.
I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. Clunky puns. There's a lot to be said for clunky puns.
Clunky pun is a good drag
clunky
name.
Clunky pun is great. Yeah. When we're next in town, we'll go see Clunky Pun.
Yeah. She's at Mary's. Yeah, so I started doing drag, and then...
And I'm just going to interject again. I'm going to throw you darts to throw you off your map again.
Yeah.
But where did you start doing drag? What was the venue?
I was DJing a party in the Lower East Side at a place called Sweet Paradise. And the party was called Jennifer Aniston. Who knows why? And every week we would print out, because we had access to the printers at Parsons, so we would print out a giant poster of Jennifer Aniston.
That's the best.
Like a different, like, we would Photoshop tattoos on her, or, like, her with, like, some other celebrity, like, you know.
Yeah.
And then,
is there a gallery of these? Like, is there a preserve?
I wish we saved them. God, so stupid. I have some of the weird printouts that I printed out there, but not those.
I'm imagining like a professor or whatever walking through while one's being printed, just being like, huh, what's well, I
think art school,
these art kids,
yeah. So I started doing drag there, but only to DJ, and then I think the like. There was some kind of a closing party, or I can't remember. I performed in drag that night, and I did Slave for You, but like as the girl in the bottom of the well in Silence of the Lambs, and had a Hannibal mask. It was confusing.
Of course.
Yeah, so then...
Did you make the Hannibal mask?
Or? I did. It was like garbage bags and like, a wire hanger or something.
Perfect, yeah.
And then I moved... So that was when I was in my apartment in Chinatown. Didn't pay rent for a few months, so I got kicked out.
Was this your first apartment?
Yeah, outside the... No. Well, yeah, I had... This is my first one that I like stayed in for a while.
Okay.
And then... I had to go stay with my friend in Brooklyn, and she lived down the street from this bar that was showing Drag Race. So I was like, oh, great. I'll like show up in drag. I was like Raja's season, I think.
Yeah.
And there was a queen hosting that did that. Her name was Amanda Poupon. and she was great. She did like... she did like ukulele songs and stuff.
Yeah.
And she had to leave at some point. She was like going to be like a nanny, I think. So she just like couldn't be out all night. And so they were like, well, we need someone to like host the show. Would you do it? Like you show up here and drag, you little weirdo. And so I was like, yeah. I can do whatever I want. And they're like, yeah. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to call it bath salts. And we did like, just like weird, stupid numbers to like Die Antwoord songs or like whatever was like Tumblr-y at the time. We had one night was like dedicated to Monica Lewinsky and like telling her side of the story. It was, we had a rave night called like Plur 420 or something. We had a YOLO night where I got this tattoo that's like barely finished. It says, I don't know and I don't care. Yeah, that's how I like got started in drag. And like that party went on for 3 years, I think.
It took off, right? It was like a really big thing.
Yeah, I had a little following in Brooklyn. And then I was like, at some point during like the first or second year, I was like, I can't fucking lip sync. I suck at this. Like, it's just like, I always go too proppy and gimmicky with it. I'm not like, you know, I don't remember words. I don't remember my own words. So I was like, I'm just going to start like singing.
Yeah.
Because I've been like working on music anyway. So like, I'll just start singing like covers and stuff and maybe an original here and there. And then that became like what I would do only.
Yeah.
And then at some point I was like, yeah, I think like this is what I like am gonna keep doing.
It's a nice natural evolution and progression of it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And what was the overlap with that in Parsons? Because I know you left Parsons, but were you starting that while you were at Parsons?
No, this was like maybe 2 years after I left Parsons.
Okay, so what was going on in between the leaving Parsons and then that?
I was making music with my friend under like another like my dead name, and I was just like, yeah, making this like weird music that was really, really bad, trying to get gigs, working at a sandwich shop, and just like partying a lot.
Yeah Well, that's a classic New York thing to do, especially while you're working on the initial music and everything.
Yeah,
isn't there a story like that in the Velvet Underground documentary? I don't know if it was a sandwich shop, but there's something.
Oh really?
Yeah, you know, or something. There's some kind of this is like, that's the classic like early bits of you know, I probably have it wrong, or maybe I don't know. There's always some like whatever Lou's job was before.
Oh
you
yeah,
know what I mean. Although no, he actually had a song out when he was like 15 or something. Like,
oh really?
Yeah, he wrote weird. He wrote songs for Pickwick Records that were knockoffs of other popular artist.
And that's funny.
And that's how him and John Cale met, because they needed a touring act to do public appearances for the song called The Ostrich, which was like a dance craze type song.
Oh, wait. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, and that's how they met. Like, it's the craziest story. Like, John Cale, like, Mr. Sophisticated European musicians, like, they're doing this sort of sock hop band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is that's your story too, right? The sock hop band.
Yeah, classic sock hop circuit.
People don't realize the sock hop circuit is still alive and well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's underground though. Like, you gotta know.
Yeah. You have to know the right people.
Yeah.
The track with Xander saying, "If I don't know you, you're not getting in," is actually about a sock hop.
A sock hop, yeah. the cutthroat world of sock hops.
Yeah. It is brutal. So people talk about the drag ball culture, but forget it.
Honey, talk about shade. Nothing casts shade like a sock.
So yeah, if your poodle skirt is not president correct, forget about it.
Your poodle is looking in the wrong direction.
Were you then making your own clothes as well? Like, had you continued that?
For drag?
Or just in general? Like, did Parsons open up that, or were you doing that before?
Yeah, that kind of became my, way to incorporate, like, fashion love was, like, to make, like, elaborate outfits or whatever, or, like, just, like, theme performances and stuff. And I got really into hair and makeup and stuff like that even before I was doing, like, drag performance.
Mm-hmm. And getting into hair and makeup, did you meet some other makeup artists or hair people and then start doing that? Or was it autodidact?
It was, yeah, very, very just trial and error. Yeah, I would go to Ricky's and get, like, Kenecalon, like, braiding hair.
Uh-huh.
And I had, like, bleach blonde, probably, like, shoulder length hair at the time. And I would just, like, do, like, weird Willie Nelson braids with all bleached out, so I looked like a weird, like, Willie Nelson, like, elf person.
That's a cute look, actually.
It was cute, because
his braids are pretty nice.
They're cute, right?
Like, they're pretty solid.
But then I would just have the braiding hair, like, together in the back, so there would always be like a lump back here.
Uh-huh.
Like, I just didn't really know, but I was like, whatever.
And sometimes those things can become signature looks.
Yeah. Macy with the lump. Yeah, love her.
Saw her at the sock hop last week.
Honey, if you don't have a lump at the sock hop,
forget about it. Yeah, your shoes can be shine, but if you don't have that, when you said the party. Partying a lot. What was the kind of partying like?
At that point, it was like, wait, I'm just gonna text my friend really quick. Oh,
your lawyer, I understand.
He's 15 minutes late too, so that's perfect.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
In New York at the time, it was a lot of open vodka bars.
Oh,
and so if you were a young whatever and you could tolerate vodka, you could, like, get wasted pretty much everywhere.
That's right. This reminds me of hearing about, like, a bar open, seeing a thing, and that made sense to me, no sense. So it wasn't a sentence. It was words assembled sort of together. I remember seeing these things about open liquor bars and not understanding, like, how did they make money? And I don't know.
It's got to just be the cheapest liquor, the cheapest vodka possible. And then you use a couple of bottles, and then it's like, when you're out, you're out, and then people want to drink more.
Yeah.
I think is the reasoning.
That makes sense. Right.
I would always leave.
I've done my work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because it's from a certain time to certain time.
Yeah, because there was a website called openbarnyc.com.
Oh, my God.
I think is what it was.
Yeah.
And it doesn't exist anymore because people don't really do that. But we would, like, hop from one to another.
So then you're doing bath salts, you're singing, and you get the sense, this is really what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so then was it sort of like a doubling down of efforts on the music?
Yeah, totally. I went through a few years where I was, like, had a, like, really intense Adderall phase, and would just stay up all night, and I was like, gotta be taken seriously as a musician. And would just work on, like, a drum pattern for, like, I ended up with, like, two songs out of that year, you know.
But the drum tracks were Beautiful.
They're to this day, they're gorgeous. They hold up, but
and we'd be programming stuff. Yeah, we're playing like drum machine stuff or
and,
on
and
the computer
synths and stuff. Because I didn't really grow up. I took a little bit of like piano lessons and guitar lessons and stuff, but I didn't really grow up playing instruments. So I felt like I was at a deficit. They had like synths and stuff at Parsons.
Oh, okay.
And
wow.
So I would just like hang out in the computer lab and go nuts.
Yeah. So did you do a lot of work on Logic or what's the other one? Ableton
Reason.
Or Reason.
Yeah, that was the one that made sense to me for some reason. And then it made for a very jarring shift to like a normal program because it's like a weird animated
interface.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's like a for kids or something, but it worked really well. And like, I guess MGMT made their first record with that.
I think so. And Todd Rundgren uses it all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's so funny how some programs get like this sort of stink on them.
Yeah.
Like people are like, oh, you use Audacity. Oh yeah, no, that's not really. Yeah, like, there's even a weird thing with Logic and Ableton. I think too.
Yeah,
some people
totally.
Are snobby about one or the other, and it's all like whatever works.
Yeah, and people who use Pro Tools are just like,
oh yeah, no. Yeah. Oh no, Logic. Yeah, that's for like the home.
Yeah. Know?
That's gross. Yeah.
Yeah. That's for like recording a kid's birthday party.
And Pro Tools is like a pain in the ass.
And it's a monthly subscription fee. Like,
I didn't
what
know
the
that.
Fuck?
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. It's psycho.
I think that's one of those things where like you're paying a monthly subscription fee. So you have to shade everything else because you got to justify yourself why the fuck you're paying a monthly subscription
literally.
Fee.
And it's not cheap either.
Oh, I can't imagine it is. Yeah. I think that's what they want to keep it like, oh, this is the professional one.
Right.
And then again, like Billie Eilish has like the biggest record in 10 years on a laptop. Logic.
Literally.
Yeah.
Gwen Stefani made her second record on GarageBand. Well, Pharrell did, so it's like a little...
Yeah,
you know?
Well, yeah. So some people are a little better at GarageBand, sure. But still, GarageBand really is Logic Junior.
Yeah, honestly, it's the same controls.
Same thing. You might have a couple less plugins, but who cares?
Yeah.
It's about the writing the stuff. Someone can mix it later anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So did you find some collaborators in order to flesh stuff out, or were you making everything yourself?
I had my friend Matt Walker helped me... We just like started playing around and making these songs together, and we like had a fake band. I'm sorry, I keep coughing. I was just screaming last night.
I inspire that coughing, so it's
and so we were like, we had this idea for like a fake band called The New Flesh, and it was like this just like psychotic kind of Kid Rock character.
I love a concept. I really do.
And then so we made a few songs like that, and then Matt like kind of lost interest or got busy with life and stuff, and mm-hmm. I was like, he was older than me and I was like 21 and had nothing else to do, so I was like, I'm just gonna keep on going with this. I'm working at the sandwich shop. And
did you get free food from the sandwich shop?
Yes.
Thank God.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was like, and with like a 20-year-old's metabolism, like perfect.
Yeah. I'll two steak and cheese and I'll have,
Yeah.
What was your favorite sandwich from the sandwich shop?
What did I get? I think it was a really basic one. It was like turkey. It was called like turkey semolina or something. It was like turkey, avocado, cheese. Sprouts, maybe hummus.
That's like a solid nutritional staple for someone who is living off of the food they get from work.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Because the like most popular one was called the spicy Rizak, which was like...
I've heard of her.
She's a Mary Sue. It was like ham, cheese, chipotle mayo, like onions. Like I just saw so many of those. I was like... And I was like hungover all the time. So,
what's your drink of choice? I mean, then it was the free vodka, but
when I did pay for it, it was whiskey, ginger.
Uh-huh.
That's what I would drink. And then now I drink almost exclusively tequila.
Mm, any particular kind?
Espolona is usually easiest. There's this one called La Gratona that is my favorite.
Yeah. So for
and
gifts
then,
at shows, La Gratona?
Yeah.
Good. But remember, folks, bring on the...
It's tough to find.
Oh, okay. See, this makes your fans have a mission now.
Oh, yeah.
It's
in a beautiful green bottle. Do you drink?
No, I don't. I used to.
Okay.
I tried really hard at it, but it just wasn't that good at it. But I like other stuff. I like K and psychedelics a lot.
I love mushrooms.
No, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I haven't had mushrooms in a long, long time. I think, but I had acid the last time I had a psychedelic, but weirdly, it was like a year ago from this past New Year's. It was like, that was a pandemic New Year's. Watch the Bee Gees documentary, Take Acid. And, and it was really good.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and what, yeah, in terms of drugs now, do you still partake or?
Every now and then, you know, I'll do like a bump or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I can't do Adderall because that will just send me into a tailspin.
But does it trigger memories or vibes from the previous time?
It just like, it's like I never left, you know? It's like, yeah, it's yeah. like, okay, we got to get it done. We got to get it done. We got to like, you yeah. know, it's like, if we, maybe we should ask her for another one because then in a few hours you're going to want it because we're just going to have to stay up all night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's a whole system that goes on.
Yeah.
Now, see, I'm on Adderall for ADHD, and it's been a lifesaver. But I think whatever,
I'm sure.
whatever your experience, like when you have, it's almost like that thing where people talk about, oh, I can't drink screwdrivers anymore because I drank so much and I got sick. When we have an association with something,
yes,
that's it. It's going to be that way if we go back to it.
Well, I started Wellbutrin.
And, oh, I've heard that. Yeah, that's amazing.
And that was great because it's like not something you can really abuse. But it does give you, it gives you what you were like, if you were trying to self-medicate with uppers, then yeah. like, it kind of gives you what you would need from that, you know,
without the other stuff where you're like,
without no. euphoria and like, you know,
and tweaking the drum tracks.
Yes, exactly.
Too much. Yeah.
Yeah. I do it a normal amount now.
I've heard wonderful things about Wellbutrin. And so did you have depressive issues as well?
Yeah. I'm naturally like prone to, not wanting to get out of bed. Like, just like losing interest in things quickly. And like, you know, years of blasting my serotonin receptors didn't really help.
Yeah.
But
I always think that just speeds up the thing that we need to find anyway.
You think?
I mean, it's not a doctor's theory or anything, but, but it's like, because you needed something back then,
yeah.
say, right? So there was already something there.
Yeah.
And then now you found like the Wellbutrin, the thing that works. Clearly with a fondness for uppers, there's something, again, ADHD, so prone to enjoying, right?
Yeah.
That. And that's why, because it helps the motors run.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's totally right, because it's like I wouldn't have done so much of it if it wasn't like, you know, I needed to find some a healthy way to like incorporate a little speed into my life.
I just need a little pep, a little get up and go.
Yeah.
You can't be dragging ass at the sock hop.
And there's only so many Red Bulls that you can drink at the sock hop. They won't allow that many.
They won't serve you anymore. Yeah. With that, I remember before getting the ADHD diagnosis and at that point, Ritalin, the amount of Mountain Dew that I drank at like age 13, 14 was just like shocking.
Do you remember this drink? It was a diet drink called Redline.
I remember, I never got it because I'm not a big soda drinker, but I remember seeing it.
Yeah, I think it had like fen-phen in it or something.
Probably did. This is probably like Four Loko era, right?
It was before.
It was, oh, wow.
It was
okay.
Wild. I would get it in high school if like we were like waiting on something, you know?
It was like an appetizer.
I'll just go get a couple of Red Lines.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be cool. I'll be fine. Yeah.
It was wild. And I'm like, I can't believe they sold that over the counter. Like, you know?
Yeah. When you smoke meth, how long are you up for? Is that like the same amount as if when someone eats it or when someone, well, no, shooting it is like a whole nother round.
Yeah, I never shot. Smoking it is, I don't know. I mean, you can kind of stay up for ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And maybe that's a dumb question too, because I know meth in general, if you take it, it's days, right?
Yeah, but you don't have to. Like, I don't know. I would like, I didn't have access to as much of it as I would need to stay up for days.
Oh, okay.
So I would if I was like with someone,
sure,
but
if the pantry was full,
exactly. other than that, I learned later how to stay up for days when I had the Adderall. That was a good progression.
Yeah, we grow in sophistication with these things.
But yeah, no, the meth. I don't remember. I never really sleep anyway, so I was like, I think it was just kind of like,
it just assisted
it seamlessly fit into my life. It was beautiful.
Right, well, you're interested in fashion and seams and all that stuff, and
it was very John Galliano. One seam, yeah.
Halston, you know, one cut and then that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, really elegant.
Who are some of your favorite designers?
Balenciaga with Guess Gear was the one, and Prada were the ones that like really hooked me as a kid. McQueen, Raf Simons, John Galliano, I appreciate more now, but then I was like, it's too clowny. Like, it's too crazy. I wanted, like, for some reason, I was obsessed with, like, serious, like, Prada was putting out, like, this, like, serious, like, beige, like, wet girls. Like, I was with, like, knee socks. And I was like, I fucking love this. Like, you know, and Balenciaga had, like, really like kind of fascist heels that were just like brutal, but then with like very normal outfits, and I was like, I want to be her, you know. It's like a boring but like uncanny woman.
There's something about her, like that kind of thing.
Yeah Why is she wearing all beige and just staring at a wall?
I love that beige was like your go to
beige, gray. Yeah, I loved it.
What colors do you find most populating your outfits now?
I wear a lot of pink, surprisingly, which I'm like, I never think of myself as like a pink, like girly person.
Well, pink can be so many things, though, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah,
but I've been doing a lot of pink lately, and I guess I kind of have always, and then. Other than that, kind of like brown and nude.
Yeah, so you got to keep the brown in there, the earth tones somewhere,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
It's in the heart.
I agree. Yeah.
One of my favorite color palettes is like that early 80s. Well, actually, the pillows kind of indicate.
Oh, like this like mauve-y.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I want to get some more clothes
rose.
In these. Yes, dusty rose.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. That weird mint green that was popular in the early 80s.
Yeah,
I love that. Like the Incredible Shrinking Woman color palette.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and back to music. So you were making the stuff on your own and then doing the performances at Bath Salts. When did it start to be, I'm doing a show as me, opening for people, getting bills, et cetera?
I think it was when Bath Salts was still happening. I would play with other like queer acts mostly. And there were like some DIY spaces that were like open to queers, but like their main, like these people that I worked for a while at this bar called Happy Fun Hideaway, they had a place called Secret Project Robot, and they're like, hippie kind of burnery vibes, but then they're like, but yeah, we like the queers too, like, you know.
Yeah, you're fine too. Yeah,
and so it's like
you can only have one or two days, we're not going to give you the whole
yeah
week.
So it's like you could get your foot in with these like noise bros or whatever.
Yeah,
and if one of them like took a liking to you, then like you could kind of like wiggle your way into other stuff.
Yeah,
so it kind of slowly happened. And then also like the art world was always like a place for me to find legitimacy, I guess.
Sure.
Because it's like, you know, transgressive drag, like gender, whatever. And I was like, sure, okay, that's what I'm doing.
That's my philosophy, and I have a manifesto that I'm working on.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
My friend Bradford Nordine, who I'm meeting for lunch, like really helped me with that, like to like sell yourself in this like art way that it's just like it's more welcoming than the music scene, which is like,
what is it like there?
It's just like I don't know. There's a lot of just like weird, like bro-y, like mediocrity, you know?
Yeah. And somehow that never gets expunged from the music
scene. It's just always how it's going to work, you know? Yeah. And it's like, and like perhaps at some point, like the scene that like has controlling stake in the like scene will be a different group of people.
Yeah.
But it will still be like not welcoming to outsiders, you know? It's just always gonna be like these people are the ones that are kind of like the main people, and then like whoever else has to kind of slither in, you know? So it's like, it's fine, it is what it is, but it's like that was never like a reliable place for me to like find supporters, you know?
And in a way though, it kind of forces you to find the things that will give you support, because in a greater way than the other folks in the bro-y, we've just decided that they're okay. Because so many of those, we've decided they're great, or the people that ooh and ah at the party, whatever, they most of the time don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Or they don't affect people.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, if they're saying you're okay, it's probably because they're like, we get you to an extent and we're not threatened by you.
Yeah.
And you can exist there, but we also are not thinking of you like on the same level as us, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're okay because you're not a threat.
Yeah.
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 And it's just like, cool.
Yeah, you're totally cool.
Yeah. So what were some of the venues that you were playing at the time?
Glasslands back in the day, 285 Kent, Baby's All Right, which I still play sometimes, but they drive me crazy because the sound guy is like just always like they've got better sound people now, but like for a while it was like Baby's All Right and Rough Trade were like the sound people were so condescending to me every time. They would always like ask me if I needed a mic because I guess they thought it was like a drag queen at that, like doing a drag performance or something.
Yeah. And he had like, also I'm guessing because of the electronic tracks or something, they're like, where's the guitar?
Yeah. So they were just like, why do you need to sound check? Doing karaoke.
I've noticed too, when I was watching a friend's band in Boston dealing with a sound person, and it was seemingly easy having done some sound stuff. I was like, wait, so they have a bunch of stuff on track.
Yeah.
You really just have to put the faders up kind of where they tell you.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable how much hassle.
Oh
it was
my God. Well, they just want you to know that they know so much fucking more about, you know, phase and it's, you know, feedback. It's like, it's not hard. It is not hard.
No, right. Exactly. Especially when you've made the stuff.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of frustrated people trying to just, excuse me, prove. See, I inspired coughing in you and clearing my throat over here. I try to do the same.
I feel very at home.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I want a welcoming atmosphere. This is why. Excuse me. Wait. There we go. Great. When you mentioned the art world, again, I'm thinking of the Warhol thing as well. It's like that's a time-honored tradition, particularly in New York as well, or anywhere really. I suppose in LA, it's similar.
Yeah, of like art embracing music that's not getting embraced other places.
Yeah.
And like, it's cool because you end up like kind of incorporating like either performance art or like collaborating with other artists or filmmakers. Like Laura Parnes just made this movie that was like a really cool like documentary narrative movie that took her like a really long time to film. She filmed it over years, and then it has actors, but they're in bands. Like the one of the girls from like Gang Gang Dance is in it, and then it's also just like documentary style footage from shows, and that's how I'm in it. It's just like a show that she filmed that I was playing.
Yeah.
But then there's like interviews with like Kathleen Hanna and like Brontez Purnell and like Ms. Neon and stuff. It's just got this like crazy cast of people just like talking shit. So it has this kind of like Jim Jarmusch like coffee and cigarettes thing.
Sure, yeah.
But then there's also like a rom-com happening on the side. So yeah, it's like you meet people like that who do like really cool, interesting stuff. And like that's not something you get if you're just like in like band world where we're talking about pedals. You know? It's like, give it a fucking rest with the pedals. Just like.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what kind of gear do you travel with?
Just my laptop right now.
Yeah, well, that's all you need, right?
I started doing a like cabaret style show where I'm playing with a pianist and two backing singers.
Uh-huh.
And I'm slowly trying to get a band together where I can play shows with a band because I would like the option.
Sure.
But then, I mean, for the most part, it's like, it's just such low overhead to travel with like either a USB and I can play it off of CDJs or,
yeah.
Or just the laptop, sometimes just my phone, you know, it's like, it's just the low maintenance. You know?
It's great though, because the technology now is so perfect for that.
Yeah.
It allows so much. And also bands are a pain in the ass.
Yes.
Massive pain in the ass.
Yeah, so much stuff you have to bring. I have merch with me on this trip. I've never been so mad at a suitcase. Like, I hate traveling with shit, you know?
Yeah. Can people buy the merch on your website?
Yeah, I think there's a link in my bio on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Because I mentioned, not on mic, but I wanted to go to your show last night, but I had the COVID fear because I'm traveling.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, my apologies.
Of course.
I'm looking forward to seeing you live, though.
Yeah. I'm back in May.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
That's great. I'll have come back from then. Great. Where do you know where you're playing in May?
I think it's something related to DragCon. I don't know if it's at DragCon.
Oh, yeah, right. That thing's happening, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's great, though. Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's those great events, like, after. It's like the city's
never
more alive. Oh, it's so good because there's so many after things.
Okay.
You know, like, Precinct will have something, and then every place has something.
Okay.
And then the sock hop thing's over at Mary's, and it's good. I can't remember where we were on the timeline, but that doesn't really matter. So, okay. So, what was the first EP or LP release that you put out?
First EP was called Help, and that was in 2015. And that was like 5 songs.
And was that with what label did you do that with?
That was self-released.
Self-released, okay.
And I got a boost because the video was really good. It was like an animated video. So that kind of got me in front of people a little bit. And then my first album on a small electronic label in New York called Sweat Equity. That was in 2017. And then 2019 was my third album. I put it out with them as well. And then I switched to, for this record, Accidental Pop Star in Philly. And the artist Shamir runs that label.
Cool. Yeah, Shamir's lovely.
Oh, the best.
Yeah.
Just the best.
And I love the new album title, Heterosexuality.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the album is great too.
Yeah,
it's like so like it's like post like Bjork. So it reminds me of that a lot.
Shamir's productivity is like insane.
Crazy. Crazy. They have like 20 albums.
Yeah.
That's the discography. Sweat Equity was cool.
And I've listened, by the way, I've listened to a lot of it. I was drawing a blank because I was like, what were we talking? We were talking about, right? What was the first record? So forgive me for the sort of lumping question.
No.
But the other thing I wanted to ask is, what's dating life been like in the last couple of years? Because, you know, it's been crazy times and everything.
Very, very weird. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I had a long-term partner for 3 years and then we broke up, but we still make a lot of music together. So that was good.
Did you first meet making music or did that come up? Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. No, yeah. It was nice. Yeah, it's nice because we had the lead in and then like, and then now we're back to where we were. And so, yeah, that was 2015 to 2018, I suppose. And then I had this really weird kind of long, I guess like a year or over, a little over a year thing with this person who was very weird and like a liar.
Okay. So was the weirdness the lying or was there other weird stuff?
Weird across the board. And then the lying kind of slowly like made its way to the surface. He like was revealed to have his girlfriend staying with him. Because COVID happened and she couldn't like fly home.
Sure.
so yeah, that was like, that was weird. And then
so you found out that there was like a double situation happening, or,
yeah, totally. And then it was just like, that time that you were being really weird, okay.
When it's like the usual suspects, when it's all coming to you at the end, you're like,
I dated Kaiser Sose. Kevin Spacey, actually. He's the guy in Alaska.
Well, you know, it's he didn't come out about it at the time, but now Kevin Spacey's been, you know, we know about him, so you know, he didn't,
yeah,
there's no threat of blackballing,
right?
Yeah, we're already gonna get that from the Dolly Parton discussion. Oh, I was gonna say, Cocaine and Rhinestones, that guy, people request, will you talk about this artist, will you do a thing on this artist? And he said, I can't get into the Dolly Parton thing because it would destroy the image that people have of her. No one wants to hear it. And I was like,
what
are you talking about? Yeah, and remember, folks listening, we didn't say that. I'm reporting what someone else said.
I bet she's like me. that would be cool.
It would be cool. But and I also wonder if it's just that, you know, she's a very astute businesswoman, and maybe she's
boring.
Yeah, it could be that, and it could be that thing of like, oh, if a guy was doing it, they'd be like a great, solid businessman. But if a woman does it, they're called a bitch.
Yes.
She's like a pioneer, and she had to do all sorts of stuff, get away from Porter Wagoner, all that stuff.
She's got to be running on all engines go at all times.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So she must just be kind of like, I bet she's like, all right, bye, y'all. And then like gets off stage and is like,
it's like
blank face, like
Krusty the Clown when the lights go off.
Yeah! On Simpsons. Oh my gosh, she starts smoking a cigarette. I kind of don't buy the full tattoo thing either. I'm like, that's like too good to be true. She has a two, or she probably has like a few, but
I think there's a sheer garment that she's wearing that shows like her arms are fully covered in tattoos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and but apparently it's a whole like trellis of roses.
That's
the rumor, and I love the rumor.
Yes,
I love the rumor. Yeah,
yeah.
The other rumor I heard that was great is that, you know, obviously she wears wigs, that's true,
yeah,
but that she has a very, very, very short haircut and just wears like,
oh, like a chic little Mia Farrow or something.
Exactly.
Oh, fab.
Which would be great because she, if she wanted to go out and not be recognized, who would the hell would recognize
her? Oh my god. Oh, like a, like, oh, she could do like a black pixie cut.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, throw on a t-shirt, no one's gonna,
or like Lori Petty and Tank Girl.
Yes,
with the tattoos and everything.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, she looks, that's the truth, she looks like Tank Girl.
And,
she was gonna play her mom in the film, but it didn't work out.
My friend Lauren Gregory made a really amazing short animation that's like all oil painting, so it like looks crazy, it looks like an oil painting like moving, but it's Dolly Parton and she just like starts taking off her top and like has all these tattoos, and like, it's a really short animation, but she's just like, oh yeah. It's so funny, it's so good.
So what's your dating style like? How do you like to, in the first days of courtship, what's something that tells you that this person is of interest?
Oof. Now I'm like not even doing that.
Yeah,
I'm like, I need sex sometimes, and that can be acquired.
You know, you got your bases covered.
Yeah,
yeah.
But, yeah.
Where's the rest of the tour bringing you?
Seattle tonight.
Yeah,
and then Portland the next day, and then back to New York for a second, and then possibly a last location, but it's not confirmed.
Oh, a secret. Yeah. Secret mystery. Yeah, that's it. And before we go, what about one or two movies that either were pivotal to you or that you just love?
Videodrome is like always. Yes. I have the Long Live the New Flesh tattoo.
Oh my God, amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
The VHS is up there on the bar. And it might be, you might be in the blind spot for seeing
you
what
have
the tape
an
is.
Association with Videodrome, right?
Yeah,
the Videodrome Disco.
Videodrome
Disco.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's always been one of my very favorites.
It's
as
so
well.
It's so good. It's so fucking good. And I just got to model Blondie's merch.
Oh, amazing!
Which is like so weird, but I, like so like so just like crazy. I was in one of their videos a while ago too. It's like when Blondie and Joan Jett did a song together.
Yeah.
So I'm just like a background person, but like so weird to have any kind of like association with Debbie. Like, love Blondie, like the music I also like listened to so much, but mostly for that fucking movie. Like that was like her burning herself with the cigarette is like,
yeah. Hello, lover.
Everything. Yeah. Oh, that older woman who's just like hitting on James Woods.
Oh my God.
The like Greek lady.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. It's just heaven.
It's one
heaven.
Of the greatest things ever made.
Yeah.
You know, I've never done a movie club on that. So I would love to do a movie club on that with you.
Oh, yeah.
Sometime. Yeah.
I would love that. I love all Cronenberg.
Me too.
I just started getting into the old stuff a little bit. Like, what's the...
Shivers, Rabid.
Well, that stuff too. But like Scanners? his school stuff. Like Stories from the Future or something.
Oh, I
like
need
that.
To see that.
Beep, torrented it.
Ooh, will you send it to me?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank
Stereo you. 1969 or
that's
something.
The other one I need to see. I think the Criterion Blu-ray of Videodrome has a couple of those. Okay, yeah. I need to get that. It doesn't make sense that I don't have it, actually.
I haven't.
That's my handle on the other.
I don't think I ever heard of them until I was like really going through his discography filmography and seeing which ones I missed.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was watching, like, I watched Rabid because I had never seen that one. Then I was like, what are these?
And great. Another fun thing. Ivan Reitman produced those. Like, I love that Canadian clutch of guys. Yeah. Ivan Reitman was like producing all sorts of stuff and worked with David Cronenberg. I love that whole scene because like in Canada, they were just like, we're going to make the weirdest movies ever. Have the Canadian government pay for it.
Yes.
And also, I have to say, Existence is the only one of his films. I was like, this is not as good as Videodrome and it's similar ideas.
Crash is...
Oh my God.
Incredible.
Crash is so great. The sex scene at the beginning.
It's so good.
Where they're doing the fantasy talk.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh yeah, we're in for a different film. And then we go wildly into other territories with that.
I love Crash. I love A History of Violence. I thought that was great.
Incredible.
Maps to the Stars.
Oh, that's the one I have to watch.
It's really good.
I haven't seen that. And then there's the other Viggo Mortensen crime one.
Eastern Promises.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Incredible.
Yes.
Incredible.
And then my merch is Should I Marry Darren Aronofsky? I have a song called The Aronofsky Method, which is just like absurdist lyrics. And then it has this chorus that's like, Should I Marry Darren Aronofsky? Should I Marry Darren Aronofsky?
And so another favorite filmmaker then.
I love Mother. It's like one of my favorites. And then Black Swan, obviously.
The Wrestler.
The Wrestler.
Yeah.
Here's me as The Wrestler.
Oh, amazing.
Shirt. Where is it? Yeah, this one.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, I love Cronenberg because he writes makes movies like a novelist, kind of.
Yeah. I saw him once at a Whole Foods in Venice.
Really?
But
hot.
Yeah, and he is, and very distinctive. Like, you don't. I walked past, it was a salad dressing aisle. Some people were kind of chatting him up. You could tell that it was going on a little bit too long for his taste.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay, I won't bother. And then I accidentally locked eyes with him in the checkout line. I just was aimlessly looking around. Our eyes met, and I could see in his face, he was like, I think I know you know who I am, and I don't want to talk. I was like, fair enough, because he's got a very striking visage.
He scanned
you. Yeah, he did. My head started to swell a little bit, and then I was like, I just want to buy myself and leave.
Yeah,
please.
What's the drug in that?
Oh, God, what is the drug in that?
All that's coming to mind is Ethereum. I'm like, my brain is poisoned.
Well, listen, I know you have a lunch date.
Yes.
And we have to do a little promo video.
Okay.
So, unless there's anything else you'd like to mention, I'd love to tape another one with you sometime in the future.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And I had a really fabulous time with you.
Yeah, me too. Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on.
Yes.
Head on over to patreon.com/Craig and Friends to get these episodes well in advance, ad-free and completely uncut, and plus a lot of other bonus options. So go over there now to patreon.com/Craig and Friends, check out the options, support the show, and set yourself free.